Welcome to another episode of Tell Me More, a hospitality data podcast. I'm Stephanie Ricca, as always, here with STR's Isaac Colazzo and CoStar's Jan Freitag. Last time we met, we were on location at the Hunter Hotel Investment Conference. This time, we are back in our offices. Life is back to normal, at least for today. Hi, guys.
Normal, really? I'm not sure it's normal, but we are back in our offices today. We can say that confidently.
Hi, Steph.
Hotel industry is never normal, right?
Exactly.
Unless we're normalizing.
Oh, there we go. Bifurcating. That sounds pretty bad, doesn't it?
So we're already starting with the buzzwords, people. We give the people what they want. Really, to start today, I want to begin our first segment, as usual, with the latest CoStar STR hotel performance data. This time, we're going to look at highlights from March. Isaac, you're going to start us off. And in addition to completing March, we also just tied up the first quarter of the year, which carries its own stories, implications, through lines. You tell us, Isaac. Give us the highlights.
Yeah, it's lots to digest for March. And again, you've probably seen this in the press, but RevPAR in March fell 2.2% year over year. This is the first drop in RevPAR since February 2021, right? So this was very different. But again, there's a real reason for this. March this year had Easter the last week and also had a fifth Sunday, which was Easter Sunday, March 31st. So that really impacted performance. And I think we've got to keep that in mind. So don't think this is an indicator of things to come. The other thing we were looking at is, again, the continued impact of Las Vegas on U.S. results. You know, obviously the results of the U.S., the minus 2.2% includes Las Vegas. But if you take out Las Vegas, March RevPAR would have declined just by 1.2%. And so, again, that just tells you the volatility in Las Vegas. And we've done some work, Steph, on Vegas just to understand its volatility. And it's real. This year has much more volatility. And that volatility is a result of just changing conferences and the calendar itself. And, of course, the Super Bowl. So there's been a lot of factors in the first quarter. For those of you watching Las Vegas going, how can it be up and down so much? It is. It's because, again, it's just volatile this first quarter. We don't expect that in the second quarter or to the same degree.
Let me jump in here and ask, can you define volatility in a market? What does that mean for hotel performance in a market?
It means you're seeing big swings in RevPAR, and it's mostly from the ADR side. In Las Vegas' case, it's the ADR side. Occupancy doesn't move very much. It does move, but it truly is the ADR piece that's causing the volatility. And obviously, you know, the Super Bowl created a lot of volatility, very high price. So then the following week was low. So just up and down. It almost looks like a heart monitor when you graph it out. But it's the heart monitor of our nation's hospitality health. And so, again, that's just the way it is.
And so, and we are very much alive, just to be clear.
We are very much alive. I think that's the key. And we'll talk about that in a further piece as we get more into the performance. But it is, I mean, there's some changes going on, but it's not what you see in the March data. Don't take it to the bank and say, oh my God, we're entering a hotel recession. I don't believe we are at this point.
Jan, what's your take on adding some color to that?
Yeah, we're in this interesting environment where the macroeconomic data continues to be quite strong. That said, we're recording this on the day when the first quarter results came out, and they were actually not as strong as expected. Maybe some would argue a little bit disappointing, but nonetheless, we have always suggested GDP growth breeds demand growth, and we are now 11 out of last 12 months room demand has decelerated. And Isaac and I want to talk about this when we talk about the first quarter data, but we could probably talk our way out of that being terrible news, because this word that Isaac has used a couple of times, bifurcation, and we'll jump more into that.
Yeah, I think, and again, you just mentioned first quarter and I didn't go over that. You know, first quarter was also, you know, pretty low, right? It was only 0.2. And really for us, again, we missed our own forecast, right? We expected the first quarter to be up 1.9%. And that's on me. But again, the shift in Easter, I think, was the biggest. And even though we built it in and we knew the first quarter would be the weakest of the four quarters of this year, we still missed it. But a lot of that is, again, what we've been talking about, and people have been actually on earnings calls been discussing, is that bifurcation. We are seeing a real difference depending on which end of the price spectrum you are in terms of the hospitality industry.
Yeah, I was traveling this week. I was presenting to owners and operators, partially here in Nashville and elsewhere. And you know, at the beginning of my presentation, I always ask, who here is glad that Q1 is over? And everybody sort of laughs and raises their hand. And I said, okay, did you expect this? You know, and people sort of hem and haw. And I said, you should have expected the first quarter to be weak. We've said this. Isaac has said this. We have forecasted this. This should not come as a surprise. But what did indeed come as a surprise when I talked to revenue managers, general managers, owners of these management companies, they're like, it was actually a little weaker than what we had thought. Like, yes, we had said it was weak, but it actually was a little worse.
Yeah, it was weaker than what we expected as well. I mean, there's no doubt. Again, we missed our forecast. I think the thing that also, when I was looking at the quarter and what I've been seeing now for several quarters is, you know, the slowing in ADR, which we expected, right? We knew that some of the ADR growth we had seen, well, not some, the ADR growth we saw right after the pandemic was not sustainable. But what's surprising at the moment is the ADR growth that we're seeing now for most of all this year and part of last year is below the rate of inflation. So that means essentially, again, real ADR is well below 2019 at this point. I think it's about, well below, maybe too much of an exaggeration, but it's 2.3% below where we were in 2019. But that means that, you know, hoteliers are still being impacted by higher costs of everything. And again, the rates are not keeping up with that at this point. And they haven't matched 2019.
Right. But apart from the connection to 2019, just looking at CPI versus ADR, just in the month, it means that owners are going to have a really, really hard time driving their bottom
line. Right, because everything we keep, we've talked about this, insurance costs, employment costs, everything's going up. Food costs definitely going up as well. So there's definitely going to be more pressure, I think, this year than what we've seen in the last 2 years post-pandemic.
Well, I will tell you that I listened to Hilton's Q1 call yesterday, and President and CEO Chris Nassetta used the term bifurcation. Did he hear it here first on Tell Me More? I don't know. We'll have to wait and see.
And it's real. So that's a good thing. That is a real, I'm glad. I mean, we should be talking about that because if you look at the data, you can definitely see it. The upper tier, even in the quarter, except for luxury, had positive RevPAR, not, you know, large gains except for upper upscale, which did see a 3% increase in the quarter. But then you go to the other half of the chain scales and you see real declines, and then led by economy, where RevPAR fell by 6.8% and then mid-scale fell by 4.5%. There's a big gap there. And I just listened to Jamie Dimon, who was interviewed on the Wall Street Journal, and he also emphasized this thing of the middle and lower income individuals being squeezed. And he said, I don't know where he got this data, but 20% of the population's wages have not kept up with inflation. So those individuals, again, depending, you cannot travel like you did in the past. And even middle income individuals, I think, are being squeezed because everything is going up in price. And sure, you have to make a choice. And you're going to be more selective. I think that's a word we're also going to talk about, selective travel, that people are going to travel, but they can't travel every weekend like they may have a year or two ago.
The numbers that I like to look at, you just mentioned the chain scale data. I look at the class data just because it has the unaffiliated properties in it more often. And so luxury class demand for the quarter up 4.6%. Economy class demand down 6.1%. Yeah. And if you look at mid-scale and economy type properties make up 48% of all rooms. And I think that deceleration in demand was so severe that it sort of skews the data down. And I think this is something that we will have to continue to remind our readers and listeners about, that if you take the total US number, I think for this year, you should always look at how is the upper end doing versus how is the lower end doing, because the lower end has just so many rooms, you know, that it sort of skews the data down.
And it's also interesting when you think about upper and lower, it's what's driving it, right? So what's driving the upper end is the return of top 25 markets. So when you look at the data, top 25 markets did very well in Q1, or, you know, did surprisingly well in Q1. They were up by, I can't find it real quick, but they were up by about, I can't find it. I was looking for the data. They were up while the other markets were down, right? And that's the key. I mean, that's also, and why is that? Well, groups and meetings are back. And that's very important. I found the data, Stephanie. So top 25 were up RevPAR-wise 2.5% the quarter, while the rest of the markets were down 1.9%. So you, not only do you have a bifurcation in chain scales, you have a bifurcation markets. In locations as well mm-hmm. in markets. And so it's just a different pattern. It's just different this time around than what we've seen over the last, since the end of the pandemic.
Or is it more normal because we're now having the return of the group traveler and the corporate transient traveler, and the top 25 markets traditionally have outperformed and the upper end of the market has traditionally outperformed?
Is it, I guess we are, I would say yes, but I think, you know, it, we are getting more normal, but we are seeing some areas where it's not normal, that we are actually below where we were in 2019, that we went backwards. And I was looking at weekend data because one of the hypotheses, we said, hey, weekends are down. They've been down almost every weekend this year, but now we're actually below where we were in 2019, right? It'd be different if it was in line, but now it's kind of going down. So yeah, I agree there's some normalization there. I think that's a word we continue to use. But also, we're just seeing that whole bifurcation, just a very different pattern. And again, a lot of this is being caused by inflation and the lack of wage growth and higher debt, delinquencies, you name it. That's all starting to play into this, why we're seeing the differences in performance and why we hadn't seen it before.
Now it's time for us to pivot to one of the new features that we've got going in the podcast, where each of our gentlemen here chooses a topic of the month to talk about a little bit in more detail. Jan, you're going to start us off by sharing some information about New York. You know, we just mentioned some overview of top 25 driving that performance for the quarter, but what's going on in the Big Apple?
Yeah, I had the opportunity to moderate a panel in New York about New York with some large owners and brokers. And there are four topics that sort of stand out that make New York City a very, very interesting market to focus on going forward from an investment perspective. It is true that New York City has 8,800 rooms in construction, the largest construction pipeline in the top 25 markets, probably in the nation, actually, which is a 7% supply increase, which is even if you think that these rooms are going to open over the next 2 years, that's 3.5% supply growth over the next years. That's a lot. But once those properties open, there are only 1,000 rooms in the planning stage, because getting a hotel zoned, getting a hotel approved by the city council is so, so, so hard to do. Number two, short-term rentals have effectively been banned, right? And if you follow our friend Jamie Lane from AirDNA, has this fascinating stat where at the beginning of 2023, we had 23,000 Airbnb units available for less than 30 days. So call that a night as a hotel competitor. After September 8th, I think, when the Airbnb ban took effect, that number has dropped to 3,000 or so. So it wiped out 20,000 units. So those units are not coming back. And we think we're going to see that in the compression rate pricing premium that hotels will be able to exert. Thirdly, you still have those 16,000 rooms that house the unhoused, the homeless, and the refugees. We've talked about this before. We're getting that number refreshed as we speak. There have been a hotel or two added. So those properties are probably not going to come back in any, like, this quarter or next quarter. So those are three things that are really, really, really helpful that constrain supply and really help with pricing power we expect. The one thing that was super interesting that the operators mentioned is we have to be really careful if you underwrite a hotel in New York today, because the union contract is up in 2026. And a number that was just sort of batted around was that a housekeeper may make $50 an hour when all is said and done. So that was just sort of eye-opening. But overall, sentiment was very positive. New York City transaction volume has actually accelerated already because of a lot of high-end deals. And there is this sentiment that a lot of international money, when they look at the United States, first they look at New York, And then they say, oh, luxury hotels have done well. Let me just park some money there. So we fully expect, you know, more transaction activity as the year progresses.
I think some of those green shoots, dare I say.
Green shoots. Oh, my God. That's a term we haven't heard in a while.
I know. We should ban it completely from this podcast henceforth. I think your take on New York.
I think, you know, what's interesting about New York, and Jan and I have done some work on this as well, in terms of the rate ADR side, right? So, you know, folks, we're not sure what the impact, obviously we know there's an impact of the short-term rentals on New York. But when you look at it by sub-market, the largest rate growth has been in the JFK and LaGuardia sub-markets. And you go, why there? Well, that's where a lot of hotels have gone offline to house immigrants and homeless. And there's just not supply there. There just isn't. And we've seen double-digit ADR growth there. And then when you look at Midtown and go, okay, where most leisure guests will say, you're seeing good growth, but it's not over the top, right? So ADR is growing and occupancies continue to be decent there. So again, I think New York's going to be very interesting to watch, to see how it changes. I think there'll be much more room for compression going forward, as it continues to build and people continue to go. But again, right now, from an ADR standpoint, the growth has been literally from these submarkets that really have nothing to do with, at least I don't believe they have anything to do with the leisure traveler. It's just really that's very constrained at this point.
Yeah, and my comments are also more about the macro. Yeah. Those 8,800 rooms still have to be absorbed. I'm not saying that the supply picture is rosy. You know, today and tomorrow, there will be more hotels opening. But I think if you're an investor, have a long-term perspective, New York City is just an interesting market to look at.
All right, Isaac, what's your topic of the month? I have a feeling you're going to start us with a little bit of a what-if scenario.
Yeah, I think one of the things I started thinking about, I was doing some analysis and going, you know, we use quarters as a mile marker, right, for the rest of the year and the future. And it's like running. When you're running, you're keeping pace. You go, like, where am I mile one? Where am I mile two, right? Because you want to finish the 10K or the half or whatever you're running. Well, right now, the mile marker for quarter one will completely mess you up if you believe it. Yes, it was down. We know it's down. That is the truth. But it's a truth because of this Easter shift. So I did my analysis and saying, what if quarter one actually ended April 20th? That takes in both post-Easter on both sides, right, of last year and this year. And what I found is the industry is actually doing okay. RevPAR is up 1.7%. So think of this as an April 20th year-to-date number. And that may be a better indicator than just looking at quarter one. Why is 1.7% meaningful to me? Well, in quarter four, the industry only grew 1.5, and in quarter three, it only grew 1.8. So this 1.7 to me says, hey, while it's not gaining momentum, the industry's not losing momentum despite this bifurcation in demand. So again, that gave me a little bit more confidence. Yes, it is slower growth than what I would have expected, but it's not, well, what we forecasted, but it's not so detrimental as that minus 0.2% and going, oh my God, things are going to come to an end. That being said, what we are, again, this, I think it's very important that we continue to consider the impact on many Americans that inflation, debt, interest rates have had. So as you well know, Stephanie, and many of you who know me, I'm one of the rare ones that go to Coachella every year. And so I just came back from weekend two. First of all, you haters, it's not dead. Definitely you have to go there. It is it is more than a music festival. It is an experience, right? You'll say it. And that's what we do for a living.
That's hospitality these days, right? Everything's an experience.
But what you have to understand about Pasadena, Palm Springs, is it's a hard place to get to and an expensive market. So yes, what I saw in Coachella this year was a much, at least weekend two was not sold out. Weekend one was. But when you look at the hospitality data, you could actually now see that impact of lower income individuals not being able to attend. RevPAR in Palm Springs for weekend one was down 15.7%. And that included a 6.6 point drop in occupancy and a 9% drop in ADR. ADR for weekend one was still very substantial for the 3 days, $491. So it's still not a cheap place to go. Weekend two, which just ended last Sunday, or Sunday the 21st, RevPAR for the 3 day weekend was down 24%. Wow. And again, down because of occupancy. And again, rate also coming down. And I think that's just showing it's not that there was no interest to be there. You know, weekend one was sold out. But it is, you can see that maybe people are making alternative accommodations or doing something different or staying in their car because it's expensive. And I can tell you, everything at Coachella is expensive. So cocktails, food, you name it, you're going to pay a lot more than you did a year ago or 2 years ago, definitely.
Does this fall into this, what's the phrase that I'm looking for? You know, we used revenge travel as that go, go, go every weekend, pay whatever. But what's the new term? Is it selective travel? I feel like I've heard this from one of you or out there in the industry. And I forget the exact phrase, but
I think it is. I think people will travel. I think, again, this whole notion of every weekend and, you know, doing, I think that's kind of ended. There's a group of people that can continue to afford that and can do that. Although I do think that becomes tiring at a point and then it's not even income. It's just you want to stay home, right? So that's also played. But I think selected travel, I think people will travel. And what is oddly enough, I was looking at Easter. And this Easter week was actually better than last year. And I was surprised. And again, there could be other factors involved, but it's like, well, this wasn't as bad as I thought it would be. And so Easter was up RevPAR year over year. And I did match the weekends, right? Making sure the weeks and all that. I'm showing about 4.1%. And I have a different date range for all that. So we can discuss how I did that later. But it tells me, okay, people will travel. It's just going to be, they're going to be more selective. There's no other, we got to come up with a better word, but that's the only word I can come up with.
I know. And it's driving me crazy. As your producer, I've been typing in the background into Google to see what that word was. It's going to drive me nuts. But listeners, if you know it, send it to us because otherwise we're going to call it selective travel. But I think there's a different buzzword for it.
I think when I look at this conversation that we're having, there is a little bit on the spending side, this conversation about have to have versus nice to have. And so car insurance, have to have it.
Right.
So experience travel, maybe nice to have, but maybe even within travel, there is have to have a nice to have. Birthday, celebrations of life, wedding.
Agreed.
You got to go, but music festivals, you know, maybe more of a nice to have. So people, well, not for you, of course.
It's a must
you,
have.
That's on Isaac's must have list.
But maybe there is also this trading up for people saying, look, there are certain trips that were nice, but I just can't afford it this year.
I think so. And you're also, what's interesting about this haves and have nots, it also playing out in the airline industry. You know, Delta's doing pretty well. Other budget airlines are not doing as well. And again, that's where you can see that there is again, bifurcation, and it has to do with income levels, I believe.
Well, Delta is doing well because their premium class product is selling hotcakes, right? Yep. I mean, that's what S. Bastian said at the Hunter conference and in the latest quarterly earnings call.
But they also increased their, what do you call it, in terms of load factors. So their occupancy, their plane occupancies actually went up. So it's just, it's a different time. I think that's what we're going to have to wrap our head that we normally, when we go into a recession, right, everything comes down. But this time it's, again, going different directions depending on which tier of the industry you're in.
Now for my topic of choice for the month, guys, I want to get your take on transactions. I've noticed over the last couple weeks or months or so that finally we are starting to see a few more of the 100 million plus hotel deals, single property deals happening, which had been few and far between. Jan, you look at transaction data pretty closely within the CoStar data. What are you seeing?
Well, let me start with a sentiment assessment. After having traveled to quite a lot of industry conferences where I talked to brokers and investors and owners and people who are willing to put money into CRE, specifically the hospitality space of commercial real estate, it seems to me that people have just adjusted to the fact that the interest rate is what it is. Right. And that, yes, we may get a rate cut, maybe two, but it's going to be more important psychologically than actually in your spreadsheet. And so people are just saying, you know what? Let's just move on. So my favorite quote here is Peter Oppenheimer, chief global equity strategist for Goldman Sachs, was on the Willy Walker webcast. And he said, we should assume the cost of capital is not trending downwards. And so this is coming from Goldman Sachs, somebody who sees a lot of deals. And he's just like, look, this is what it is. And I think Blackstone made, not in the hotel space, a $10 billion investment in multifamily, which is a very, very sizable chunk of deal. And to me, that is sort of an indicator of money is ready to be spent. People are ready to transact. They're saying, look, the capital cost is what the capital cost is. Let's just build this in and move along. And if we get a cut, that will be nice, but we're not banking on it. We have to deploy this capital. So we have the transaction activity last year was down significantly. The transaction quarter one was down, I want to say like 60% compared to Q1 of last year. I have full conviction, and I shouldn't say it that strongly, but I have full conviction that the transaction volume will pick up as the year progresses, specifically in the second half of the year.
I don't think it's surprising. Again, even though in the last 10 years we haven't been in this kind of interest rate environment, but we have been in this interest rate environment in the past, in the 80s, if I remember correctly. So it is about getting used to it. And I think it's the same thing. It may be more selective. So maybe 5 years ago, people were just spending money left and right and they didn't care because the cost of capital was so cheap. Well, now it's not cheap. So you're going to have to be selective as well.
Just your comment, we've been there before. Keep in mind, though, that a lot of people in our audiences actually haven't been. Oh. I'm talking to revenue managers and junior investors. Not that we're old. I'm just saying there are people who have only ever lived. They graduated into almost free money. And for them to
they graduated into free money.
Well, I love it. Came out wrong, but you know what I mean.
Yes.
I agree. In an environment where interest rates were super low, and now the new normal, the actual normal, is free money doesn't exist. Money is never free, so interest rates are going up, and everybody, like, we can say, oh, we've experienced this, but there are people out there for whom this is completely new.
Right, but they can, agree, 100%. Us dinosaurs, we've seen it before, we made it through, and we'll make it through again. But it to me, it's like everything else. I mean, yes, it's going to take time, but it will open up again, people will start transacting. But they're going to be more selective. It's like going out, it's like everything we just talked about. It's just different because it is not free. But I love that idea of graduating to free money. We got to use that one more. That's a good one. Yeah, that's really cool.
It is interesting, though, to see that psychological permission slip, right? That couple voices of reason, voices of experience saying, okay, we're just going to do it and doing it. And then watching that happen, it really does sort of illustrate that art and science of something that seems as straightforward and textbook as financing and banking. But of course, nothing really is.
Nope.
Now, guys, you might remember when we last sat down together in March, I brought a new closing element to the podcast, and we're going to do it again because it was fun. It was a big hit. I don't remember right off the top of my head what you guys said last month in March, but we're going to bring it back again for April. I want you each to give me a fun metaphor about the current state of hotel industry performance. It can be a simile, it can be a metaphor, whatever you want. Jan, you start.
But just to refresh your memory, clearly I didn't make enough of an impact. But last time I talked about volcanoes and water bubbling up because I just come back from Costa Rica.
Oh, that's right. It was a great one.
See, thank you.
How can you top it?
She's just pandering to you, Jan. Come on.
Yes, volcano.
I love it. Volcanoes. So I thought long and hard about this. And to me, since I'm from Germany, my simile for first quarter and the remainder of the year is Kinderüberraschungsei. And what this is, it's the Kinder egg that you have a little bit of chocolate. And the way that the Americans have it, it's slightly different from what I grew up with. But ours was just a chocolate egg, and inside was a little plastic egg, and inside was a little toy. And so first you open it up, and then you start with a toy. And that's Q1. And it's really frustrating, because you don't know where you're going and you don't know what it is. And but as the year progresses, as you put this toy together, at the end, you're going to be so happy. And then you're going to get chocolate. So that's my metaphor for the year.
Wait, Jan. So you do the toy first and the chocolate last when you open a Kinder Egg?
Yeah, because I want to see what the toy is. Well, when I was 8 anyway. So today I would eat the chocolate first.
Now, this sounds like we might have to toss this question out to our listeners to see how you approach a Kinder Egg, toy first or chocolate first, because that might sort of have an impact on how you view the first quarter. But either way, I think it's a really fun one. Isaac, what do you got?
I have two ideas for my metaphor, but one of them is optimistic, kind of, and the other one is more pessimistic. And they all came from Coachella.
Okay.
So it's all bad. So
the first quarter is like new, no doubt.
No, actually, first. But I'm thinking about summer now.
Classic.
So Lana Del Rey has a song called Summertime Sadness. We could be into some summertime sadness. We thought summer would be really good this year, but what I'm seeing on the international outbound, it's still growing. So there, and with this squeeze on middle to lower income individuals, yes, we could be singing Summertime Sadness with our friend Lana Del Rey.
Oh.
And the other one would be a song by Bleachers called Roller Coaster. And the rest of the year could be just one hell of a roller coaster. Lots of ups and downs. You're going to lose your stomach at times. It's going to be great, and it's going to be scary at other times. So those are two.
That.
Yeah. So,
but you always make it to the end, and then 9 times out of 10, you want to turn around and go back on again.
Do it again, right?
Right. And that's the industry we're in, right? It's just that's what we love to do. So
it's the thrill of it.
The thrill of it. Exactly right.
As always, thank you both for your insight. Thank you to our listeners. Find the latest global hotel industry news on hotelnewsnow.com. Find this podcast wherever you like to listen, and make sure you give these guys both follows on LinkedIn. Thanks, guys. See you next month.
See you next time.
Hi, I'm Devon Reed.
I'm Omari Head.
And I'm Chris Henry.
We're the hosts of the Next Gen in Lodging podcast on the Hotel News Now podcast network. It's a monthly show in which we interview a new generation of hoteliers to get their insights into a variety of disciplines and topics, from finance to food and beverage and hotel operations. Listen to us on Spotify, Google, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode of Tell Me More, a hospitality data podcast, was recorded on April 25, 2024 by me, Stephanie Ricca. The episode was edited by Sean McCracken. Find all hotel industry news at hotelnewsnow.com. Subscribe to this and all Hotel News Now podcasts wherever you like to listen. Just search for Hotel News Now. Thank you.